Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. On this week's show, we'll take an informative sea voyage with two of the world's experts on sustainable seafood, award-winning authors Paul Greenberg and Mark Kurlansky. Then, I'll teach you how to cook the delicious but often maligned Gulf fish, the sheep's head, on the half shell. We're swimming with the fishes on this week's Louisiana Eats. Paul Greenberg's most recent book, Four Fish, The Future of the Last Wild Food, provides a frank look at the huge issues surrounding the world's fisheries today. While examining overfishing and the problems inherent with fish farming, Four Fish also gives us a very intimate look into Paul's lifelong love of the sport. Paul, welcome back to Louisiana E.
Thanks.
So take us back to your childhood. How did you acquire this love of fishing?
Well, you know, my parents divorced very early on, and we lived with my mom. And I think when you live with a single mother, there's a huge pressure on you to raise your boys as men. And I think my mom detected an early interest in fishing, and she kind of fed it. Whenever I wanted to go fishing, she would always drive me where I needed to go. But the other thing she did is, you know, we lived in Greenwich, Connecticut, which is one of the wealthiest towns in America, if not in the world. It's where all the hedge funders live. So there were all these huge estates which had cottages around the estates that in former times were used by the liveryman or the, you know, the stable boy or whatever, but we rented them. And the other thing that these estates had were ponds, and you could wander them forever finding little fishy lakes here and there. But my mom, whenever we looked for a cottage, we always looked for a place that had a pond. And, you know, she always had me sort of check out the pond and make sure it was a fishy pond before she signed the lease.
So what are the four fish and why are they so important?
The four fish that I focused on are salmon, sea bass, cod, and tuna. And each of them, they're not exactly species so much as they are flesh archetypes. I mean, the way the market recognizes it, the way the consumer recognizes, represents something different in the kitchen. So salmon is a slightly oilier fish. It's good for baking and smoking. Fish called sea bass, and I would lump other fish called snapper and even grouper into that area, are, you know, sort of more substantial white-fleshed fish that you might cook whole or that you would maybe broil. Codfish represents the sort of white flaky thing that you would deep fry, put on a fish sandwich or in a fish stick. And finally, tuna represents that sort of steaky chunk of meat that you throw on the grill or, you know, as we've done in the last 20 years, turn it into sushi. So it's the flesh archetypes that I followed throughout the world, both in and out of farming and wild systems.
Why are those four fish so important?
Well, they represent four distinct areas of the ocean, right? Salmon, I often like to say that salmon are the Chinese food delivery of the food world. Before we screwed up everything with our rivers, salmon came right up to us. They came into our rivers and we didn't have to go out and catch them. I mean, they really came right to us. All we had to do was set up a net and we would catch them. So those represent really the river-ocean interface, and that's one important ecological zone. Fish called sea bass or snapper or whatever represent the near shore. And they represent the next step out that humanity took in its exploitation of the sea. Codfish represent a little bit further. They represent the continental shelves. And finally, you know, tuna represent the open ocean. They are the ultimate international fish, and they represent really the final frontier of fishing and the closing of the loop, in fact, because, you know, once you overexploit tuna, there's really nothing left to exploit. There's no more water to cover because they represent the whole ocean.
We see so much farm-raised salmon. Why isn't that a better choice than the wild ones?
You know, I'm anti-bad practice. And unfortunately, salmon farming in the past has been plagued by some pretty bad practice. First of all, salmon are carnivorous, which means to grow salmon, you must feed them other fish. And where do those other fish come from, by and large, is the wild. So there is this robbing Peter to pay Paul thing. But that said, you know, salmon farming has decreased its per fish footprint over the years. More and more things like soy and corn, different byproducts and so forth are being put into salmon feed, so they're reducing that fish load. The other big fight about salmon has to do with where you farm them. I mean, you farm a salmon where other salmon live. Surprise. And if you put a salmon farm right down in the middle of a salmon migration route, you're going to have potentially disease transfer issues. And, you know, the science is debatable, you know, as to how much of an impact this has. But anything that's going to disturb an already endangered species needs to be very, very strongly considered.
You've told me, Paul, that you see Louisiana as the last great hunter and gatherer nation.
Yeah.
And yet you've also made it very plain in For Fish that eating wild food is really a privilege. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts about where we stand in the scheme of all this?
Louisiana's fortunate in that it has a great bounty of fish in spite of the spill, in spite of hurricanes. It's still a largely intact ecosystem. What I think the challenge for Louisiana going ahead is that if Louisiana wants to keep having a fishing industry, and I don't mean a sport fishing industry, but a commercial fishing industry, is they need to figure out, the fishermen and the marketers need to figure out a way to highlight the specialness of that seafood. You guys took a huge hit with the spill, not necessarily biologically. I mean, it's still up for grabs. But, you know, what did take a hit is the reputation of fishermen.
What are we going to do about that?
There needs to be some very, very careful marketing done. And a lesson can be learned in part from the catfish farmers. This sort of campaign developed of like U.S. farm raised catfish, safety you can trust. Well, that's a very defensive thing to do. Customer sees safety. What's the safety issue around catfish? It's like, ugh, I'm not going to get catfish. I'm going to get something else. And I was talking to a New York marketer about this, and he was saying, you know, they really need to take a different approach. What they need to do is to really look about the positive sides of things. And I said, well, go with that. Describe what the campaign for catfish would be. Well, it's like, I imagine, you know, the veranda of a beautiful southern plantation and bountiful trays and gracious hospitality and this fish being laid out to you. And, you know, you buy the whole experience. So in a way, that's where we need to go with marketing Louisiana seafood. I mean, you can't just shove it in people's face post-spill. You got to wait a little bit, and you got to figure out what are the ways to elegantly introduce the style, the sense of it. I know that there are some issues that we have to work through here, bycatch, all these kinds of things, but they're actually solvable issues. So I think Louisiana fishermen need to go ahead, get their environmental certification so that we can have a green product. Get the word out there that it's a clean product. And then eventually, you know, hopefully we can reintroduce this as this better product, you know, an alternative to some of these imported shrimp that are coming into the country.
Well, you've been shrimping lately.
I have.
Was that a first for you?
That was my first shrimping experience. And what I've come to realize over the last year or two is that fishermen are actually part of the ecosystem. And that if you don't have fishermen meaningfully taking stuff from nature and giving back, you know, in the form of stewardship, then what you're going to have is, you know, the Gulf Coast is going to become an oil extraction system. If this doesn't stay a food system, it will be an oil extraction system. And if you think the same ain't true elsewhere, you know, in Alaska, they want to put in the largest copper mine on the North American continent at the headwaters of the biggest salmon run left on Earth. So again, we can let that go to pot and, you know, not respect our fishermen, and then that salmon system will become a copper mining system. What do we want? I mean, personally, I want food systems.
Well, I know that you've been down here researching a new book, so
yep.
Give us an update on that. How's that going?
I have been really pleased by how generous people have been with their time. I'm also confronted with the fact that three or four books about the Gulf came out post-spill.
Not all of them nice.
Not all of them nice, but, you know, certainly many of them informative. So there is a kind of a what I call a journalism scorched earth situation down here, in that a lot of people have talked to the media already. So I find myself kind of figuring out, you know, A, how to kind of get close to my subjects, but B, also, how do we kind of look at this in a post-spill way? And what it really is about is the loss of local seafood and how do you get it back? So it might be focused on New York Harbor, which completely lost its seafood, New Orleans, which has a lot, but has a lot of threats to it, then Alaska, where you have the bulk of American seafood comes from, and finally China, which is the great replacer of all things wild. I had an interesting conversation with somebody from one of these trade journals, I think it was like Seafood Times or whatever, and I said, what's the most important thing in seafood today? And he's like, China. And it wasn't just China. It was China's ability to control pricing in the seafood market. They are so big in terms of consumption, so big in terms of farming, so big in terms of wild catch, that they dominate the market. And you can't tell the story of the Gulf without telling the story of China as well.
Well, we love having you down here to visit with us, and I hope you'll come back and see us again soon.
I will indeed. No, I love being here, and you know, crabs and squid, they're coming up.
Paul Greenberg, James Beard Award-winning author, seafood lover, and lifelong fisherman.
Come on, big fisherman. Let me ask you, are you a big fisherman?
Yes, I am, dude.
Then let's get together and begin casting the lures into the wind, lures into the wind.
I'm a big fisherman. Let me ask you, are you a big fisherman?
Hell yeah, fool.
Then let's get together and begin casting the lures into the wind, lures into the wind.
One of the most fun elements of our Louisiana Eats evening with Lynn Rosetta Casper was playing Stump the Cook, utilizing special Louisiana ingredients with Chef Frank Brightston as Lynn's competitor. Audience applause determined that Frank was the winner after he described how he'd prepare the sheep's head. No, we're not talking about the head of a sheep. In Louisiana, a sheep's head is a delicious fish with a bad rap. To help improve its image amongst diners, in 2004, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved a name change for commercially sold Louisiana sheep's head, and it now goes by the name Rondo Sebream. Frank suggested cooking the sheep's head in a fashion known as on the half shell. Remove the fillets from the fish, but leave on the skin and scales. If you're cooking it on a grill, just lightly season the fish and cook skin side down without turning until the fish is cooked through, a process that won't take more than 5 minutes. Or use your trusty black iron skillet indoors and start the fish flesh side down. After 2 or 3 minutes, flip it over and finish cooking on the skin side. The moist and delicious, perfectly cooked fish easily separates from the skin and scales. No matter what you choose to call it, sheep's head or Rondo Sebream, it's sure to be a winner on your dinner table. I'm Poppy Tooker, and this is Louisiana Eats. And now it's time for our Louisiana Eats Culinary Quiz Question of the Week, brought to you with support from French Market Coffee. The correct answer to last week's question, what is the name of Chef Aaron McCargo's popular Food Network show, is Big Daddy's House. Now let's see who this week's lucky winner is. Thomas Walsh, our Louisiana Eats producer, is manning the grinder.
This past week, we had so many entries from out of state that I was almost certain our winner would be from someplace other than Louisiana. But luck got involved, and as always, luck doesn't really consider the expectations. So congratulations to New Orleans resident Jennifer Smith. You've won this week's culinary contest. Whether you listen from near or far, send us a response as soon as you can.
Our lucky winner will be receiving 3 full-size bags of French Market coffee, including dark roast with chicory, and French roast. This week's question is, what is the name of the company that installed the revolutionary growing system used on the rooftop garden at Rouse's? Send your answers to Louisiana Eats at WWNO.org by midnight Sunday night. All correct answers received will be mixed together in our French Market coffee grinder, and one lucky winner will be chosen at random and announced on next week's show. Again, this week's question is, what is the name of the company that installed the revolutionary growing system used on the rooftop garden at Rouse's? Email those answers by midnight Sunday night to LouisianaEats at WWNO.org with culinary quiz in the subject line, and you could be next week's lucky winner. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. Prolific award-winning author Mark Kurlansky is perhaps best known for single-topic books such as Cod, Salt, and The Big Oyster. He doesn't reserve his pearls of wisdom just for adult readers, though. Mark's fourth children's book has been published. Its chilling title, World Without Fish. Mark, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Thanks.
A world without fish. Do you really believe this is possible?
Well, it's certainly possible. If we continued the way we're going and made no changes or adjustments whatsoever, it would happen and might happen alarmingly quickly. We are doing some things to try to turn it around with varying degrees of success. Basically, we have to stop taking more fish than the ocean produces. There are two basic principles of biology that you always have to understand to understand this. And one is that for a species to survive, it has to have a large number of individuals. If it starts losing individuals and becomes a smaller population, at some point, and it's hard to say exactly what point, but at some point, there'll be too few of them for it to survive. And the other thing is that for a species to survive, there have to be a lot of other species around it. So when species start losing individuals, you're starting down a road which can lead to losing species, which can lead to losing more species. And if you continue doing that, eventually the whole thing will unravel and the oceans will go back 550 million years to the Cambrian age when there was nothing but plankton and zooplankton.
Why did you decide to turn this into a children's book?
Because of a number of books that I've done, like Cod and The Last Fish Tale, I've traveled all over the country and actually all over the world talking about these issues, and I've talked to kids in schools, and I've also talked to adults. And I'm struck by how little people understand it. And kids in particular seem very interested and concerned about it, but don't understand it at all. And I thought somebody ought to just explain what's happening to the ocean, what would happen if it didn't get fixed, what people are doing to try to fix it, what's working, what's not, what you can do. And it's a book that kids can read and their parents can read, and hopefully they can talk about it.
Mark, what do you hope will happen as a result of your new book, World Without Fish?
I hope that people will better understand the problem and become more actively concerned with what to do about it. It's kind of different for adults and kids. For kids, I just want to give them the information because they're ready to act. Kids really, they really want to do something and they just need more information. With adults, I think they need a little prodding to realize how serious it is. Isn't it interesting that kids so completely understand how serious all these problems, these bad things that are happening to the environment are? They just intuitively get it. Grown-ups, you kind of have to hit over the head for it to dawn on them.
Louisiana makes two guest appearances in the book. First, with the mention of Paul Prudhomme and the redfish, where you actually credit Paul with helping to bring the redfish back.
It's something he never intended, you know. Black and redfish became so popular that it literally led to wiping out the drum, the redfish. And he felt terrible about that and worked very hard to reverse it.
The second mention comes with the unfortunate tale of the BP oil spill. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, the U.S. Congress is debating expanding drilling rights offshore. And this would be the first time in the history of oil exploration for there to be an accident in which nothing was learned. No new rules, no new regulations, no new legislation. Just go do it some more. And what's really bad news about this is that they've basically, the oil companies have drilled all of the relatively easy places. So now they're looking to go to more fragile places and more difficult places. So there'll be more accidents. And the thing to understand here in the Gulf and everywhere else in the world, is that once you have these accidents, the oil doesn't go away. They just clean up what you can see, and the rest of it all stays there. There was a diesel barge that broke up off of Cape Cod in 1969, and all this black muck landed on the beaches. And just like, you know, the BP spill a year ago, the press was full of it. Everybody was talking about it. And then they cleaned up the beach, and everybody went back to Cape Cod, and everything was fine. Nobody thought about it anymore. And today, scientists at the Woods Hole Laboratory go into the marshes of Buzzards Bay and find the residue of this diesel from 42 years ago and do research in how it's changing genetics and reproduction of fish life. So, you know, here in the Gulf, the big discussion is about whether Gulf seafood is safe to eat. And, you know, it probably is. But that's not the real question. The real question is, will this seafood continue to live the same life cycle as it always did before, reproduce in the same ways? Has the natural order been altered? People talk about the BP spill as though the Gulf of Mexico was this closed body of water. It's not. So we're talking about the entire Atlantic. And there's lots of unforeseen consequences when you do bad things to nature.
Well, thank you, Mark, for coming to visit with us on Louisiana Eats.
My pleasure.
Mark Kurlansky, author of the new book, World Without Fish. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, we uncover problems in Louisiana's MSC Certified Sustainable Crab Program.
I was really excited when I heard about this product, and I think it's something unique. It's something that you don't see out there at other restaurants. So from my perspective, it's a great marketing tool. If we're the only restaurant in New Mexico and Albuquerque that's selling this Louisiana blue crab product.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from French Market Coffee, Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse, Palace Cafe, and the Bourbon House, Lights Egan Funeral Homes, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Cooking Magazine. Thanks to Thomas Walsh, our associate producer and sound engineer. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.